You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network at 7:06 on this Friday morning, March 21st. Nice to have you along. Appreciate you being with us for these 2 hours every weekday morning. Coming up in just a little bit, our regular week in review panel with journalists Jennifer Schulze and Mark Jacob and former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, of whom we'll ask the simple question, is the President of the United States still accountable to the judicial branch of government in this country? In other words, for all the talk of sliding toward a constitutional crisis or threatening a constitutional crisis, aren't we already in one? And we're kind of in national denial. We'll talk to our panel about that coming up. We'll talk to Dan Schumacher about sports as well, with the Badgers winning in the first round of the NCAA tournament and Marquette playing later on today. The Badger women's hockey team is in the Final Four starting this evening against the Minnesota Gophers. Just a busy day all around. So let's find out what the weather is going to be like for that. And for that, we have meteorologist Brittany Merlot to tell us about the lull. Lull. A lull's a funny word. When you just think about that word, lull. We're in this lull. But between storm systems, what's it going to be like come Sunday when we get this next little batch of reminder that, hey, the calendar might say spring, but, you know, maybe not quite yet.
I know. It's a tug of war of winter and summer right now. We've got mostly sunny skies across the state at the moment, mid-20s to 30s out there. Breezy. Winds are gusting out of the south up to 25 to 30 miles per hour. And a south wind is a good wind if you want warmer temperatures. And that's what we're going to get today. Some upper 50s far south, low 50s into central parts of the state, and some low 40s far northwest today. We will become cloudy. We have a front that's going to be marching through the state, starting in the afternoon, far northwest, and working its way southeast towards Milwaukee tonight around 8-ish. Now, what's going to happen with this front? Not much. Honestly, probably a few scattered showers. Maybe a few flurries might mix in as it passes, but it'll be here really quick and it'll leave really fast as well. So this is not a major event. And we do stay sunny and calm tomorrow. A little bit cooler, mid-40s west, low 30s east and by Lake Michigan. And then on Sunday, we're probably going to see some winter weather advisories for a good northern half of the state and maybe a winter storm warning towards Rhinelander, because we're looking at some heavy accumulating snow hitting the Northwoods. About 3 to 6 inches is possible for a good chunk of the area. And then near Rhinelander, they could be nearing double digits. And this is going to be Sunday. It's going to be moving into the state pretty much Saturday night around 9 o'clock into the northwestern parts of the area as a wintry mix. It's going to be snow, sleet, then flipping over to rain as temperatures warm up. And down south, it's going to be rain most of the time. But this wintry mix will hit most of the state pretty much from Madison north. And this will be overnight Saturday and into our Sunday morning. Then it'll all be rain. Then it'll switch back to snow again. It's going to be a mess on Sunday.
So when do we get those temperatures near 80 back here again? I really like that last Friday. Can we do that again real soon?
Maybe in May.
Well, yeah, I know. It is what it is. All right. Yeah. Brittany, thank you so much. Have a great... Well, wait. We didn't make a stop in Tigerton, as we are wont to do at this time of day. Good morning from Tigerton, writes Rob. Partly cloudy and 28 degrees. It was a beautiful sunny day yesterday. With the snow we had, it made the scenery beautiful, beautiful with the trees. I took some pictures. He said, I slept over 9 hours last night after being up all night Wednesday plowing snow. I finished up yesterday morning and watched the Badgers beat Montana yesterday afternoon. And then he concludes by saying spring truly starts on May 1st. In other words, Roger just wants to continue making the money. So he give does. That man some more money making snow, if you would, please.
I will.
So, okay. See, we take care of you, Rob. All right. Thank you, Brittany. Have a great day.
You too.
It is coming up on 7-Eleven right now and in sports, as we said. And as you just heard there from Rob, the Wisconsin Badgers were winners. They pulled away from Montana at the end of their first round game, 85-66 over the Grizzlies, sweeping away the ghosts of last year's first-round loss to James Madison. Up next is BYU. That game will be tomorrow evening, 6:45. CBS has the TV, but you should listen on the radio if you're in Amory or Wisconsin Rapids or Richland Center, where you can hear the game on one of our Civic Media stations there. Not on the Civic Media app, however, during the NCAA tournament. So if you're in those locales, tune in the game on the radio to the Badgers-BYU Saturday at 6:45. Marquette's first round game is this evening. It'll be on TBS. They're a 7 seed. They'll be taking on 10 seed New Mexico. So you can catch that on the television. And the Badger women's hockey team, as I said, they're in the Final Four for the NCAA tournament. They are playing in the Twin Cities, taking on the hosts, the Golden Gophers of the University of Minnesota, coming up later this evening. Giannis scored 28 points last night, and the Bucks defeated the shorthanded L.A. Lakers 118-89. L.A. was without LeBron, without Luka. They were without their top four scorers and five of their top six due to injuries. And yet still, the Bucks were somewhat lucky to come out with a win, given that they shot 11 for 35 from three-point range. That would have been absolutely miserable for me to watch, watching 24 attempted three-pointers just clang against the rim. But the Bucks road trip continues out west. They are in Sacramento tomorrow, then in Phoenix on Monday, and in Denver next Wednesday. So there's a quick look at sports at 7:12 on this Friday morning. Let me take just a moment to note that the Wisconsin Assembly was in session yesterday, and as a result of that, and as a result of a schedule mix-up, I just wanted to make clear that yesterday we had on State Senator Jeff Smith. We were also going to have on State Representative Vinnie Moresi. That was my mistake in arranging the booking of it. So when you didn't hear the representative yesterday, that was entirely my fault. And I apologize to the representative and hope that he will come join us again real soon. He was prepping for a session day, and it was one of those session days that can wear a person down, as can any consistent bullying, which is really what we had again yesterday by Republicans in the State Assembly working on several different bills, all designed to target transgender youth when it comes to sports, when it comes to their medical care, when it comes to their name. All these details I'm bringing you come from Baylor Spears at the Wisconsin Examiner. Read Baylor stuff, all of it, at wisconsinexaminer.com. In it, Baylor notes that according to the trans legislation tracker, all across the country, some 796 bills have been introduced targeting the trans community. In other words, Republicans, not just in Congress, but in state capitals everywhere, are engaged in such a colossal waste of your time and resources to tug on emotional heartstrings in order to win elections and remain in political power, where they can then go forward with their actual agenda, which has much more to do with tax cuts for the wealthy, gutting environmental regulations, gutting worker protections, making it harder for consumers to get a good deal. Those are the things that they want to accomplish. But to do so, they've got to win elections. And to do that, they find it easy to engage in bullying. Now, the hearings on these bills the last couple of weeks in committee, according to Baylor's story, were emotional and lengthy, lasting more than 20 hours, with the vast majority of people testifying against the bills. But Republicans dismissed all that, saying that the policies that they are passing are popular. They cited a Marquette poll that found 71% of U.S. adults favor requiring transgender athletes to compete on teams that match the sex they were assigned at birth. Now, it's unlikely these bills are going to become law. Governor Evers has been very steadfast in his support of the LGBTQ community, and there's no reason to think that he would change. But, of course, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss thinks that it will. He says, quote, "At some point, you would hope that public pressure would convince Governor Evers that he has to change his stance. We have seen some very brave Democrats across the country realize that their party has veered way too far to the left, and if they want to win elections again, and they want to be on the side of the public, they're going to have to change their stance." Well, that gets me to the interesting point here of some Democrats beginning to splinter over trans rights and over diversity, equity, and inclusion. Democrats like California Governor Gavin Newsom, who had been seen as a rising star in the party. Rahm Emanuel was another example of one. And others who are backing off their more vocal support of the trans community. And look, if you want to win elections, if that's what you're all about, and you feel like not coming to the defense of a bullied group is the way to get there, well, you know, more power to you. But I'll say again that even though the politics isn't on the side of progressives in this case, it is clear that progressives and Democrats are not leading with this issue. They are leading on things like job creation, middle class tax relief, affordable housing, being able to afford your health care, having a good school for your kids. But there's another thing that progressives and Democrats stand for, and that's against bullying. So it's not Democrats or progressives who are leading with discussions about the trans community. It's Republicans who are doing this intentionally because they know that Democrats and progressives are going to stand up for any community that is being bullied. And then as a result, they can point and say, oh, you see, that's all these Democrats talk about. They're just about the LGBTQ community. When it's really about nothing more than making sure that in America, everybody has a chance to live their lives and their pursue happiness on their terms when they're not harming others. Now, you'll get, as Robin Voss did, you bring up again the ridiculous prospect of, you know, genital mutilation of minors and other things that are simply gutless scare tactics done in service of billionaires who you want to serve through tax cuts and through industry who you want to serve by gutting things that would protect our water and our air, save the North Woods from being overrun with sulfide mining and things like that. The politics may not be on the side of progressives who come to the defense of those who are bullied, but that does not mean that we should ever let up on the notion that we should be here for one another, that people should be able to live their lives and live their truths. And the last thing government needs to be doing, big government, is being a big government bully in dictating things. Let the private side, let people work these things out for themselves. And government should let people live their lives. More after this, you're up north. Is the show over?
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Well, we'll be talking lawyers, maybe guns and money as well, with Jim Santel, Jennifer Schulze, and Mark Jacob coming up in just a bit. From the text line, Mark in Sussex. And I want to share this because I know that this is a very well-recited point. Mark in Sussex texts, "Love it when Democrats defend transgenders when 75% of people are against men competing in women's sports. Living their lives is one thing. Get the hell out of female sports," is how he concludes. And again, there's a lot of people who genuinely feel that way. There's a lot of people who genuinely feel that somebody would go through what is times the living nightmare of determining their gender and living their life and perhaps going through surgical and healthcare matters. There's people that believe they do all that just to win a trophy in a sports tournament. Are you kidding me? Now, look, the NCAA for a time had rules. The IOC had rules for a time on testosterone levels. This is still a, shall we say, a state of flux that we're in. We're working our way through how we do this in a way that is fair to all who want to compete in sports. And whether it's measuring testosterone levels, whether it's waiting periods, whatever it is, that way can be found. But for the people who take these kinds of positions and want the freedom to look down everybody's shorts before they compete in something, that's the thing that's gross. Get the hell out of there, Mark, and everybody else. End of rant. Let's bring in our Week in Review panel here. Journalist Jennifer Schulze, Mark Jacob, and former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. And if you're watching on social media, Jim Santel is with us. He's just camera shy today. How did you put it, Jim? You look like you got in a bar fight.
Exactly. I did not, but I didn't want to share that with any of your listeners who happen to be looking on Streamline this morning. So still, we'll just talk and not see me, which is always a good thing.
I always use the phrase, I don't want to frighten the villagers. So go. No, it's okay. Don't have a problem with that. Let us start with you, and then we're going to talk to Mark and then Jennifer more about what President Trump is doing that, again, in my mind, isn't leading us toward a constitutional crisis. We're already in one. So can you set the stage, Jim, for where we are in terms of the judge who wants more information on whether he's been ignored in saying your perhaps illegal deportations have to stop. You have to turn planes around. And the Trump administration going, what? What? Can't hear you. What's this about? Where are we at?
Exactly. And so there are an awful lot of people, I think I would include myself in this folder, who say that the constitutional crisis actually began last Saturday when the judge previously articulated clearly from the bench. And oh, by the way, here's your civics lesson. When a judge says something to the bench and says, Mr. Santel, you do this, you don't have to wait for the judge to commit that to paper. That's not necessary. That's the order of the court. And in the wake of that, we're now 6 days later, and in 2 hours, he is still asking the same questions of the Department of Justice attorneys. He's looking for answers to five simple questions about where is the plane? When did it take off? Who did it carry? When did it land? Where is it right now? These are not difficult issues. All you need to do is call up your client, a federal client, and get the answers. The fact that we're not hearing from this is more than just contempt, which is very well where the judge may be going on this. But it is, frankly, once again, the open door now to the constitutional crisis. Do you speak about, Pat? Why? Because you've got a branch of government that is simply saying no to another branch of government.
But where do we go from here? In other words, what is the next step? Does the judge consider finding the lawyers in contempt or jail them or somebody in the administration below the level of the president? Because then the president responds within 5 minutes by saying, well, I'm giving them a full pardon. Or the president responds to the judge, you and what army? I mean, either one of those things strikes me as entirely possible as early as today.
Right. And that is the crisis part of this, right? That's what James Madison never envisioned. He never envisioned that we'd have a president, a branch of government saying simply no. And beyond that, we also, this is why we don't know the answer to that question. We're at that stage. And I'll underscore this. We've got heard from plainly the president. We've heard from Tom Homan, who's talked to again about we're simply not abiding. But here's the one that's really concerning for all Americans. Our attorney general, chief federal law enforcement officer, has gone on record and said, we're not going to follow. Who is this federal judge? A single federal judge, unelected, can tell us what the law is? Well, Attorney General Bondi, that's exactly how our system works. And you're saying that is also, you're now walking through that door of a constitutional crisis.
Oh, without a doubt. But yet, Mark Jacob, the New York Times, says, President Trump's, quote, expansive interpretation of presidential power, end quote, has become the defining characteristic of his second term.
Right. It's just a philosophical difference. You know,
yeah, that's it.
The great thinker, Donald Trump, is he's wondering, he's doing his own interpretation of his powers, and they're expansive. What a surprise that is. Instead of just the New York Times saying it's a power grab by a guy who, you know, who wants to, you know, to squash Congress and to squash the judiciary. I mean, this what Jim is talking about, this giant power of the presidency has been really a problem for decades, for a long time, because Congress has willingly given up power to the president. And, you know, and here we have a Supreme Court on the other side, and the judiciary side, we have the Supreme Court that, you know, you have to wonder how they're going to come down on this whole issue. So it's really kind of a scary time. But for just to get back to your point, the idea that the New York Times thinks it's some sort of just debate discussion, you know, about, you know, expansive, you know, interpretations. No, it's a power grab. It's the President of the United States trying to destroy the separation of powers and establish a dictatorship. That's really what it is. And why don't they say it?
Well, that is, of course, the big question, and the one that I'm going to ask out loud here in the couple of seconds left before a break, and then we're going to pick up with Jennifer Schulze after that, is, again, I don't expect that Jim Santel is supposed to have the answer, or Mark Jacob or Jennifer, but we are at a point where somewhere along the line, we're not going to know the answer of what happens next. And I don't even want to speculate out loud, because you then risk sounding alarmist. But it is time to sound some alarm bells if the president continues to defy the courts of the United States of America. Our Week in Review panel will continue right after this on Up North News Radio, live from Chippewa Falls on the Civic Media Radio Network. It was on this date in 1964 that the Beatles had their second number one hit in America with She Loves You, after their first chart topper, I Want to Hold Your Hand. Let's go back to our Week in Review panel here and start by telling you about Jim Santel, because you can hear him every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock on Amicus A Law Review. Then there is Mark Jacob. You can catch his newsletter at stopthepresses.news, along with his on-target video series from Stephen Beschloss. And Jennifer Schulze's newsletter, Indistinct Chatter, can be found at Substack. Go to Substack and look up at News Jennifer. And Jennifer, who could not get an edge in wordwise with all these men yapping, we're going to start with you this time around. The question before the break was, you know, where do we go from here, either in terms of, you know, the actual operation of the government, or at least where do we go from here in the coverage of this breakdown in our government? What are your thoughts on all that?
Well, I think I have a question about all of it, and that is, who is going to say no to Donald Trump?
Right.
We're seeing big law, big tech, the universities, all, you know, bend a knee. The other story that's terrifying this morning is that Elon Musk is being briefed on, secret war plans against China today. I mean, I still can't get over, why is Elon Musk where he is, doing what he's doing, and why aren't there more calls for that to stop? But who's going to say no? And I think part of the reason there aren't a lot of people saying no is, well, Trump controls all the levers of government at this point. But there also, I don't believe, is the proper alarm being raised in the various media outlets that we have. I'm not sure most Americans know what's going on. I think they have some top level ideas that Elon Musk, there's protests about him, he's firing people, and Donald Trump is doing some things, and egg prices are still high. But I just went through the New York Times since Trump was elected. And I tried to find, is there any point where they, like, basically, as the leading newspaper in the country, are putting their foot down and saying this needs to stop, the way that they did about Joe Biden. They were very clear that Joe Biden needed to drop out of the race. You know, so I think media entities can have a voice in the country. I'm not sure everybody will hear it, but I'm not seeing a lot of media coverage that A, is specific about what's happening, and B, is then taking a stand and saying, this is not normal. I just don't feel like we're getting that. That's getting through yet. I think it's just another day.
Mark, Jennifer stole your headline. You had a tweet yesterday that said, my lifelong admiration to any news outlet willing to lead its website with a simple headline, none of this is normal. Any takers?
Yeah, no takers so far, Pat, unfortunately. I've also, you know, posted on social media before that one of the most frightening things about what's happening right now is people who don't have any idea what's happening right now. You know, that they don't realize that there really is an attempt to destroy our democracy and to replace it with a dictatorship that's in effect run by kind of like Putin's Russia is run by a dictator and then his business oligarchs and all that. I mean, that's happening right now in front of our eyes. And some people who are just sitting on the couch, you know, watching TV have no idea. And I like TV too. I'm really following the NCAAs, loving it. But people need to pay attention to what's going on right now.
But the problem here again is that it would be one thing if every federal judge, Jim Santel, were to, you know, stand up for this. That would be something that media would report on. But you know, you've got Eileen Cannon down there in Florida, Jim, and it doesn't take much, and it only takes, you know, the resignation of key people, maybe the resignation of key generals and things like that. But there's always going to be some underling who's going to come up or get a spot on the federal bench and go, yeah, I'm going to go along with this too. So, I mean, the checks and balances are taking it on the chin right now, Jim.
They certainly are. And to Mark's and Jennifer's good headline, I would say beyond just this is not normal America. This is not legal America. This is not constitutional America. And perhaps our lesson should be in recent history, the pre-Gaza war Israelis who did what? They went into the streets when Benjamin Netanyahu was about to change the courts there. And they shut down the government, they shut down the state. Look at the South Koreans when the president there attempted to impose martial law within hours. They were at the National Assembly, and they were stopping that from happening. And it does take that kind of courage, and maybe it does now finally have to come from the people themselves, as Jennifer and Mark have said, with enough education about the extent to which this is a threat, not just to Venezuelan immigrants, but to them as well. And when indeed you do not get your Social Security benefits, and indeed your children are dying of measles, and yes, indeed, your economic crisis is keeping you from being able to purchase gas and food for your family. It is time for the media, and yes, indeed, lawyers as well, to have their hair on fire. And that includes, as Jennifer just said, terrible story. Paul Weiss Rifkin making its peace with the Oval Office. Shame on you. Shame on my profession for kowtowing. They know better than that. And that should be condemned again by the New York Times and by everyone else out there as well. When you've got that kind of depth, that's the problem.
But when you get, like I said, it only takes a handful, and you shared a CNN article about a judge filming himself in his chambers loading a handgun in protest of a law that bans gun magazines that hold more than 10 rounds. You've got federal judges now who have no problem, you know, flouting the law on video for social media. It's amazing.
It's outrageous, right? It is outrageous. And again, this is an appeals court judge. This is not a district court judge opposing an en banc decision of the entire Ninth Circuit, applying New York, Justice Department and Supreme Court law on guns in America. And there, once again, you've got just enough of a judicial poster child like Eileen Cannon, like this judge in California, to say, see, there are federal judges who support this too. They are wildly in the minority, but there are enough of them out there to cause that prompt, that view of the judiciary as well. It gets us.
It gets us to this point here, Mark Jacob, and that is this judge made this video to say, here's why I disagree with this ruling. In other words, instead of just writing a dissenting opinion, he's now making a video and posted it on social media. I mean, this term is used in the law all the time, but if ever there was a slippery slope, it's dissenting judges now taking to social media to try to get popular support for their case rather than writing out their dissent based on the law. This is dangerous.
Yeah. Well, right. And it goes to this whole, might is right kind of mentality. I do think that the majority of the American people still believe in rule of law and respect the law, and they are law-abiding citizens. So it's really important for the media and all of us to remind people that the Trump administration is breaking the law all the time. I mean, these departments that they're shutting down, they were appropriated by Congress. They were created by Congress. They the money is there. That they're refusing to spend it, and they are firing people, and they're breaking the law every day. And the more we become used to it, the more they're going to do it. So it's really important for us to drop in sentences that say they are illegally shutting the Department of Education. You know, they can't really shut the Department of Education without going to Congress and getting them to vote on it, which they haven't done yet.
Oh, that so seems to be missing, Jennifer, is just sliding in that little note, you know, instead of just saying Trump is signing an order shuttering the Department of Education, is Trump signing an order, an extra legal order or an illegal order, something like that, that again is factually correct. But let me look at the news coverage from a different standpoint, Jennifer, because again, they're cutting things that have already been budgeted for. There's been people who have had to be brought back after a court order, but then they go and cancel the lease on the building so they don't have an office to work at anymore. Are there any entities out there that you've seen that are doing an especially noteworthy job in tracking the cost of all this, the expense of all this?
The chaos of all of this?
Yes. Well, the chaos is pretty easy, but I mean, at some point, Elon Musk is saying, oh, we've saved billions of dollars. But there are a few outlets out there, I think, that are kind of looking at the numbers and going, no, the numbers don't add up. You're not really saving money here.
Well, and so here's the New York Times is actually doing a really good job with that. David Fahrenthold, who used to work at the Washington Post and is a kind of a numbers investigative reporter, he's doing a really excellent job of trying to figure out what's what. And he had a piece the other day where he pointed out that Doge has changed its the information that it's putting forward because they were getting caught in so many lies. And so he pointed out that it's even harder now to figure out what they're actually doing. But it's so far, you know, like 0.00001% of possible savings, with absolutely no indication of what kind of savings they're talking about. You know, it's important to point out that all of the workers who are fired that were ordered to come back are not actually in the office, but they are being paid. So no savings there. These offices where everyone was ordered to return to work had not ever been designed in the last several years to house all these people. So now there's all kinds of expenditures trying to find spaces for people to work that were ordered back to work. So it is chaos. It's also very costly, but it's hard to figure out exactly what the numbers are, because let's be honest, Doge is not, they don't really know what they're doing.
No,
and they throw these numbers and these agencies and these contracts and everything they put out there, I'd say you should not trust any of it. It's really hard to figure out exactly what's going on. But the New York Times is doing a really good job tracking it. Some of the other
There's also here from Steve in Milwaukee on the text line, sends in doge.muskwatch.com, which is a website that has also been tracking claimed cuts, itemized touch, Yeah. Yes. Oh, yes, that's right. So that's another good one to look at as well. Tony writing on YouTube, Musk is so bad at efficiency that they are now paying for services the workers can't do.
Yes.
And that's my point. For people who say, oh, well, they're just exposing all the fraud and waste in government. No, Mark, this is what Musk is doing is literally the waste, fraud, and abuse that wasn't actually happening. Yes. Until these jokers came around.
Well, and just think about it, the IRS. All right, so every time they fire an IRS agent, they mean the government's getting less money. Every time you hire an IRS agent, they're worth four or five times their salary in how much fraud gets caught and how many, you know. I mean, in effect, they are trying to weaken the IRS so that rich people can cheat on their taxes. That's what's really going on right now.
Right.
I mean, because if they really cared about the federal budget and all the, you know, fair people paying their fair share of taxes and, you know, to support the government, they would not be hurting the IRS. They would not be trying to, you know, cut out the legs out from the IRS.
Yeah. And I'll end with we started with an incendiary comment from Mark in Sussex, and we'll end with one where he writes in on the text line, Trump is doing exactly what he ran on. Promises kept. People voted him in. there are still people who have that point of view, but there is a growing number of Americans who either supported or voted for Trump who are looking and saying, no. This kind of chaos, this kind of harm, this kind of long-term damage to the country, that is not what most people voted for. Mark Jacob and Jennifer Schulze and Jim Santel, thank you all so much. Always great to talk to you all. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
We'll see you next week. Take care.
All right. When we come back, Dan Schumacher will be here. We will talk a little sports. There's some madness going on out there in this March. We'll have more after this. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
I was having this discussion with some friends yesterday about when are things going to be normal again? When are things going to be like just as they should be? And it just those first few notes of whatever Grateful Dead song that was like, this is normal. This is normal. Greg is back. Dan is back. The Grateful Dead are back at 7:52 on a Friday morning. This is my little 7 minutes of normal
for
the entire week. So,
well,
so
ironically, the song is called U.S. Blues.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Playing the blues is normal. Living the blues.
Last night was their first night back at the Sphere in Las Vegas for the next month. They're going to be residency there for another month.
Are they Dead and Company or the Grateful Dead?
They're called Dead and Company.
Okay.
Dead Forever is the name of the tour.
Gotcha.
The other thing that's interesting is that Peter Shapiro, who basically put on the 50-year Grateful Dead concert series at Soldier Field and stuff, he just opened Garcia's number 2. Garcia's so it's a completely Grateful Dead themed restaurant and a concert hall in Chicago. They have one on the East Coast, which is part of the Capitol Theater. So there's a little Grateful Dead news walking around here. So
Dan, Pat, maybe a summer trip this summer.
I would do that.
If we did all the trips that we talk about doing on the show, all the road trips and things, we would never be back in the studio again.
Right.
Which, you know, hey, with the right setup, I could see doing that. That'd be fine. Dan was yesterday. You know, I know that you're a busy person, but we also know the NC2As are what they are. Were you were you much of a couch potato yesterday, or a sports bar aficionado?
I have a TV. Okay. So I flipped back and forth. I did watch on my computer, to be honest with you. In the Final Four for Division III, UW Stout Women and UW Oshkosh were both in the Final Four. They both lost yesterday. I was following them to see how if they make the championship game. So, yeah, it was a day of basketball. I thought the best game yesterday was the McNeese State game. The upset.
Were they a 12? Yeah, they were 12 beating a 5, right?
Right.
Yeah.
They beat 5. And then I watched the Wisconsin game, of course.
Well, you know, the Wisconsin game, I'll say this much. The last game I saw, of course, was the championship game for the Big Ten tournament, where they're going up against Michigan with these 7-footers, and so they got to just try nothing but 3-pointers. There was such a difference between that and yesterday's game against Montana, where it was like, okay, instead of hitting them over the green monster, we're now hitting them over a snow fence. You know, they were able to fire at will when you've got a team without 7-footers, right, shall we say. It was just a different caliber of basketball overall. What are your thoughts on Wisconsin and Marquette and whether they'll go deep into the tournament or if they're much more of a...
I think Wisconsin's got a better chance of going deeper in the tournament than Marquette.
Uh-huh.
I do, just because of those reasons you just said, Pat. I think Coach Gard is a great coach. He's got a whole new lineup from last year to this year. I think they're playing well. They have a couple big men that can really bang it down low into the paint. So when you have a combination of that, you know, I wish the kid who played transfer to Louisville would have stayed in Wisconsin, that guy who had the multicolored hair. Forget the kid's name, point guard. He's really good. But I like my chances with Wisconsin going to the Elite Eight. That's where I see it.
Okay. All right. We are 6 days away from the Brewers opening their season, but the season has already opened overall. And so your first place Milwaukee Brewers with a record of 0-0, we can say they're in first place because currently at the bottom of the National League Central with a record of 0-2. Would be the Chicago Cubs, who I guess did not. They were basically batting practice for the LA Dodgers for those games in Tokyo. Yes, Mr. Bach.
I'm going to say this. Yeah. Last year with Craig Counsell starting his first year as coach, you know, Milwaukee talked a lot of smack, especially the fact that Milwaukee did way better than people expected. But yes, I am expecting, whether it's this season or next season, I'm going to wait for Craig Counsell's magic to turn on for that team. Because I will bow and be like, yep, there we go. Because I don't want to be one of these smack talking Brewers fans, and then all of a sudden the Cubs just destroy and level everyone in their way because Craig Counsell is a lucky boy.
That's right. I still don't agree with some of his decision making when it comes to pulling pitchers right away. Constantly,
yes. He loves
too early to me. I don't know why.
Yeah.
That part is true, but yeah, again, he's not a baseball dummy, you know.
No.
So yeah, your point is very well taken. You underestimate Craig Counsell at your own peril, but that's no fun. The fun part is rubbing it in that they're 0-2 already. I mean, if you can't have fun with your friends, the Cubs fans, who can you have fun with?
Pat, right? Dan, I have the perfect either a Brewers game in Milwaukee or a Cubs game in Chicago, and then we go to Garcia's number 2. It's a weekend, a boys' weekend. Come on, who's with me?
Again with the road trip.
Hey, you know what? It may be coming to cards because I'm unemployed come May 31st.
There we go. What a scrub. Get your money and go.
I don't see that lasting.
No,
at
neither
all.
Do
you're a man in demand. But
yeah, they did tell us this week, though, just from a news standpoint, Monday, the board of trustees let everybody know what their last day would be in writing in a letter. So,
so we know when to have the party. We know when to have the party, and we'll try to make it in a way that Greg can come join us. So, Dan, you stick around. I want to talk to you quick after the show here, if you can.
Yes, sir.
And Greg Bach is going to be back in 2 hours for Matt and Air on Air. Yeah, actually, he is Matt and Air on Air today.
I am. I'm hosting. It'll be great. Dr. Lyerly is our co-host for the first hour.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so you're going to want to tune in for that.
Yes, please.
And I'm going to tell you that next week on the program, we are going to have on Monday, Tom Kemp, the chair of the UW-Eau Claire Economics Department, talking about the impact of tariffs on Wisconsin. We are going to have Richard Trent, the national director of Main Street Alliance, talking about the impact on small business of what President Trump has done so far, and much more ahead in the week to come. Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday morning up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.